Hey everyone, it's Rich. I recently traveled to Europe. For the most part, it was a fairly routine trip. A long flight, crammed into a seat seemingly built for a small child, some barely edible food, and some neighbors with, well, hygiene issues. Shortly after arriving at my destination, I gathered up my belongings and headed for the exit. I turned on my iPhone and began checking messages. All of a sudden, I received a tracking notification. It read, "Your current location can be seen by the owner of this AirTag." I'm thinking to myself, what AirTag? I've never owned an AirTag. So I read further. "This AirTag may be attached to an item you are borrowing. If this AirTag is not familiar to you, you can disable it and stop sharing your location." The notification also said that the AirTag was first seen with me the day before. That would place me in the Miami International Airport. As I thought back to how I spent my 4 hours in Miami, I always had my carry-on bag with me. Admittedly, being a backpack when I'm wearing it, my eyes are not seeing what is going on behind me. So it's possible someone slipped an AirTag into a pocket. So I thoroughly searched my bag, but never found anything. In this particular case, I'm sure it was all just a mistake. After all, when flying, a lot of people, very close together, are heading to the same place. It would be easy to confuse a phone, I guess. But it was nice to know if someone ever did try to track me with an AirTag, my iPhone would give me a heads up. It was also a grim reminder of how advances in consumer tech have made life more dangerous and less private. But there is a positive side. Commit a crime in 2024, and you'll have an army of professional investigators like Nigel Ramutar hot on your tail. Based out of Canada, Nigel investigates a wide variety of criminal activity, from credit card fraud and intellectual property theft to organized crime and cybersecurity breaches. It was a pleasure speaking with Nigel and learning about some of the work that goes into taking the bad guys off the streets. It's also a nice little nudge for all of us to stay vigilant in protecting our personal data. You're listening to Privacy Files. This episode is brought to you by Anonymy Labs, makers of MySudo, the world's only all-in-one privacy app, and Sudo Platform, the cloud-based platform companies turn to for seamlessly integrating identity protection solutions into their software. And have you heard about the MySudo web browser extension? Breaking your online data trail just got way easier. To learn more, visit mysudo.com. That's mysudo.com. Nigel, welcome to Privacy Files.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here to speak with you today.
Yeah, fraud is a huge, huge area. So you are a professional fraud investigator at Remote Investigations Canada.
Yes, sir. And we investigate gift card frauds, credit card frauds, online frauds, as well as the e-commerce transactions. We also look into identity theft. We also devil in the OSINT world, where we see a lot of classified frauds are happening in the marketplace or even classified ads as we go.
Oh, wow. Yes. Open source intelligence. And I was doing a little research on the market and it's just massive. So the Federal Trade Commission here in the United States, you're in Canada, but the FTC said they received 5.7 million reports of identity theft and fraud just the past year, and that's up from 4.7 million the previous year, and 25% of that was identity theft. What are you seeing in the area of identity theft? Is that on the rise?
Yes, it's definitely on the rise. One of the most common scams that you're seeing, I don't know if you're familiar with SIM card frauds. The SIM card fraud is where you'll get this text saying it's from your bank, or it's saying it's an emergency, you've got to log in from Amazon, or you've got a fraud. And the minute you start typing in that information, if your SIM card is not protected by a PIN, which is you have to ask your provider for that. If it's not protected by a PIN, what ends up happening is these guys end up gaining your information It's to take over your phone. They'll call your provider. And before I know it, they're into everything on your phone. So be careful to all the people that are listening out there. Be word to the wise. Check out, you're getting a text from your bank, Amazon. Do me a favor. Don't click those links. Call them, ask them, hey, did you send me this? Why are you sending me this? There's so many horror stories that you're seeing right now. And what ends up happening is when they get the information, they could then get into your SIN number here in Canada, which is social number there in the United States. They get your ID, they can get your driver's license, they get so much more. And a lot of people don't think about the fact of identity theft. Once they sell your identity may have your address attached to that. Now, here's a whole different realm that's attached to fraud. That address could be sold and you could have break and enters happening on your home. You could have it attached to your vehicles. Fraud is just a type of a base. Like, you know, they would just say marijuana is a gateway drug. Well, fraud is also a type of crime that it goes into many different realms. You've got human trafficking is another one. They've got gift card fraud in the industry. You believe it or not, there's even some gangs that have gone from traditionally dealing drugs to now investing into doing fraud. Because the penance here in Canada, unfortunately, is the penalties are not as strong as I would say as our counterpart in the USA. And that's one of the advantages they take of being here.
And I guess the takeaway too would be, I get text messages all the time from these, supposedly from these large companies. I can tell, but I guess if in doubt, just call whatever, the 800 number for these large organizations just to verify, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, if you did not give your information to this company and they're texting you or emailing you even, you have to ask yourself, why are they reaching out to me? Why me? What did I do to get this information? Here in Canada, you know, you've got the regular banks like the CIBC, RBC, TD, Scotiabank, HSBC. There's so many of them that, but these are like the common ones that you kind of know. And the fraudsters, they know that too. They do their research. So they know the homework. So they're going to use those platforms to try and attack you in that format.
They're working overtime.
Oh, yeah. You know, this is one of the things that as a fraud investigator, I've come to understand is that they are a, for lack of term, a black market enterprise. They are a business. They've got to make money. And this is where you don't hear it too much, but I call it organized retail crime or organized retail fraud, right? In the retail industry where I come from, my background. And these guys have a hierarchy. And I'll give you an example. Here in Canada, retailers experience fraud 9 times out of 10. Those guys have been to like 5 different stores of your counterparts. So what they do, we've got the 400 series highways here, is they'll plot out a number of locations. They'll know where your store is. They'll go to that store. They'll look for the weakest link in the store. A lot of people have policies against manual entry, but they're still going to find someone and do a manual entry. And these guys are smart. They target high-end items because they want to get a refund on their dollar. They want to get the most bang for their buck because they know once you flag that card, they're blocking that card, they can't do any more shopping. But they're so brazen and so bold. They come in with the identities. They open up a credit card application at some of these locations and off to the races, as we say. And before you know it, some of them, depending how good your credit is, they might get up to $20,000, $15,000. And here goes vacuums, the Roombas, the big DeWalt saws. If they hit those stores. So that's kind of an ideology behind it, is that they're going to commit fraud to get products so they can get money back. And most times you go online, and I don't know about you, but every once in a while I'll check out. We have Kijiji here in Canada or Craigslist or some of them Facebook Marketplace. Facebook Marketplace is pretty famous. You'll see someone and almost every month they're getting a new birthday gift. They got a new saw or a new jacket or a new pair of shoes. And you're going, how many new things this person has? But you start seeing the trend. And one thing I love about a marketplace on Facebook is that you could actually see a history of the items they sold. I don't know if you've ever looked into that.
No.
But if you take a look at it and you click on one item, you could actually click on the profile. You'll see. And you start seeing all these items. And anybody who's investigated like myself in this industry, you know right off the bat, okay, like we can't say for sure 100%, yeah, they stole that, but you have a good inclination from experience. Wait a minute, why does this person have all these goods?
Because they're always one-offs, right?
Yeah, of course. They can always be one-off. But once you start seeing that as an investigator, or someone who's dealt in this industry in that way, you start seeing the correlation. And the problem is, let's just say these guys have an online, during the pandemic, they went into e-commerce. They got their own businesses now. They're doing e-commerce on the website. You're putting your information online in these sites. They're going to steal your information too. Why not? Right? They're already doing one crime. Why not do the other? So again, knowledge of who you're being contacted by, knowledge of where the information is coming from to you if you're not associated with that business, educating yourself on the current scams. Here in Canada, we got the Canadian Anti-Fraud Association that is pretty big. They send out bulletins. They warn the locals about stuff that's going on. That's a good website for those in Canada to pay attention to. And every day you see it on TikTok, Facebook, the news, there's a fraud happening. So if you're not making yourself educated, I implore you to please do in this aspect.
Let's take a quick break for this message from our sponsor.
Ugh, not again. I can't find it anywhere.
What's got you so frustrated?
Hi, Bob. Just trying to find an important email, but my inbox is a disaster. It's all ads and spam. It's exhausting.
Sounds like you need somewhat of an inbox intervention. Have you heard of MySudo?
MySudo? No, what's that?
It's an awesome app where you can create a pseudo. It's kind of like a digital alias. Each of these pseudos comes with its own email to help you organize your digital life. It's the perfect tool to keep your personal and work emails spam-free.
So what you're saying is I can use one of these pseudo emails and never have to worry about spamming up my personal or work email?
Yep. Plus, it's super secure. You should download it.
Downloading as we speak. You are a lifesaver.
Don't let spam emails take over your life. Reclaim your inbox with MySudo. Download MySudo today and start your journey to a clutter-free digital world. Visit MySudo.com and remember, stay private.
It sounds like the online marketplaces, like you said, Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace, eBay, I would assume. I mean, these you have to be very, very careful about who you're buying from.
I would say eBay and some of these places, they have a little bit of stricter controls, and they're getting pretty good at doing that because they're beginning to realize also that they don't want a bad name. See, fraud will lead to brand defamation, right? You know, your store, you know, I'm coming in shopping and here's my card's been defrauded at your location, and a customer will find out where their cards are, because once they sign an affidavit, they have to be, no, I didn't shop here. No, I didn't shop there, right? And a lot of people don't realize that. And what ends up happening is, let's just say the chain effect. So I get defrauded and I tell four people in my family I got defrauded. Those four people tell four more people. And by the end of the day, you've got near 20 people knowing that your business has now allowed that. So that's another thing. That's why these online folks are now getting a little bit more sharper and putting in defenses when it comes to this sort of.
Yeah, but I was looking at the stats here for the United States. So just in the last year, there was over $10 billion in losses from fraud. And it says that there's an identity theft case approximately every 22 seconds. That is just eye-popping.
It's definite. Gone are the days where the guys, I won't say gone are the days, but almost gone are the days where they're now stealing your information out of the mailbox. Why risk that when they can go online and get into your information because you have a lack of security? Or you're not paying attention to what's going on in your life. Everybody you see now, their heads are down in a phone or they're distracted or something. Let's just say you're working and you get a call at work or you get a text. You don't pay attention and you press that button, you open up the doorway for yourself. Another part of my history is dealing with business to business. A lot of this I have dealt with the OSINT world and verification of businesses. In the United States, I believe it's the SOS that you guys have on that Secretary of State, where businesses are registered. Delaware apparently is another, not trying to call them out, trying to put a bad name on them, but I know it's an easy place to get a business set up, right? And sometimes fraudsters will go and look up your information and try to imitate that registry and then try to get financial services through using that documents. And here in Canada, of course, we've got some business registry as well. But we're finding now that for some of these folks applying for credit, they're using, I don't know if you're familiar with VoIP numbers.
Sure.
Right. So I'm a bad guy. I come to your company. I got stolen identity. And here it is. I'm going to use an internet online number to do a credit card application. I do my credit card application. I get through or I get funded financially. Off to the races I go. I go to a dealership. I pick up a new car. I'm gone. You've now got to try and find me. Well, you may have a picture of me on that application because I got to provide my ID in quotation marks. And you're going to be looking for me, but you can't find me because the number that I've used is now a VoIP generated phone number. Let's talk a little bit further and let's get into a little bit of the AI now that we're seeing around us. And most recently in the last couple of weeks, we've seen where artificial intelligence are creating deep fakes. And what I mean by deep fakes is an ID created with a person that matches the ID. And this is all AI generated. It's a whole new world that we're seeing that's out there that come to fraud. And this is the thing, right? Anything man-made is beatable, as they say. And if you're not preparing yourself by educating yourself to look at these different avenues around you, you're going to start missing out and the changes that are happening. And a lot of fraud investigators are talking about this. They're starting to see the different types of attacks that are happening. So even with the cyber attacks that's going on as well, information is money. I don't know how familiar you are with the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center, but there are people here in Canada that has a lot of information on frauds, different type of frauds that's going on, et cetera, right? Like, for example, as of 2023, they ended up processing over 62,000 cases, around 42,000 victims of fraud, and about $554 million in losses.
Wow.
And that's just in 2023. And so from in 2021 to 2023, it's gone from 3.35 million in 2021 to $6,693,000 in 2023.
It is big business for sure.
Yeah. So it's definitely one of the things that it's lucrative. It's an easy thing to do. And people are doing it because they know of the crimes in Canada is a little bit less rules or regulations or even penalties, as we call it, or prison time. It's not as much as it is in the United States.
Is most of this, I guess, would you say just like a lone wolf style of operation, or are you dealing with organized crime too?
Well, I would say you're dealing with organized crime. I'm sure there is one-offs where people will take stuff, but you have to look at the structure of the information and the volume. So let's say, for example, you've got a group. And most recently, I remember an article in the news where, I guess you guys call it the DMV in the USA, where we had internal issue at our service center where they were creating actual identities for the individuals, utilizing customers' information. They were able to get their information, go out and create applications, get financing, and et cetera, et cetera. And before you know it, you start looking at the hierarchy and start realizing, wait a minute, there's someone controlling the flow of information. There's someone getting the information. There's someone passing the information on. And then when that person gets the information, they go out and shop, they get that much more product and they move it. So it's almost, you got yourself a fence and they're selling it in that sense. It's very similar to the organized crime model, I would call it, when it comes to doing fraud.
And you also talk about chargeback fraud. Could you explain a little bit about how that works?
Oh, definitely. And we'll actually get into a little bit of tokenization fraud, some of the stuff that people are not really too familiar with. So with chargebacks, you're the person that's a retailer. Mr. Smith comes in, Mr. Smith makes a purchase, Mr. Smith leaves, and a month later you get chargeback from a credit card company saying the client said they did not authorize this. So then what ends up happening is the investigations team, they will request their receipt, pull CCTV, and then they will take a look at it. And 9 times out of 10, the chargebacks, they all come with different codings, whether it's a customer disagreeance, which is friendly fraud. I don't know if you're familiar with the term of friendly fraud. No. I'll get into that in a minute. And then the customer saying, no, I didn't do this. I didn't purchase this. And then here comes the process of you start looking into the credit, the way it was paid. Some companies actually have the ability to track the payment method to see if it's been used at multiple stores. So here it is, you've already got one claim of fraud and you start looking into the chargeback, and then sometimes the chargeback leads to other locations. Sometimes, and we'll get into friendly fraud now, is where you'll have a customer who makes a purchase, they may forget, air quotes, that they made this purchase. And then they come back to the store and they say, hey, you guys charged me for this. I didn't make this purchase, et cetera. These are normally people of creatures of habit that know your system, know how to manipulate the system. They actually do this in e-commerce quite a bit. I don't know if you've seen that. E-commerce friendly fraud where they'll order items and they'll say, hey, we never got the items. they do that a lot. I know that Amazon was targeted for a while like that. I can't speak on behalf of them, but I do know of stories that that's been happening. And this is quite something common that you heard of friendly fraud. Now, I mentioned tokenization fraud. Are you familiar with tokenization fraud?
No, I'm not.
Okay. What type of phone do you have?
It's an iPhone.
Okay. On your iPhone, you've got the payment choice, Apple Pay, correct?
Yes.
Right? So I'm a bad guy. I steal your credit card. I take your credit card or your debit card, and I add it to my iPhone. All I have to do is now look for a place that accepts Apple Pay, right? And now I go shopping. The thing is, the customer service person that's taking a payment, they don't touch your phone. They're not going to ask you for ID because all you're doing is tapping with near field communication from terminal to the phone. Apple's Pay then encrypts your credit card number. So when it comes out on the other end, it's not the same number on the receipt. It tokenizes for security reasons. If your credit card or debit card, let's say, is $5,000, I could spend a whole $5,000 because it's not like tap where there's a limit. With the near field communication, I could spend as much as I want because it's on a device. Now, I don't know if that's changed, but this was as current as up to last year. But this is what's been happening. And the bad guys are aware of this. The problem is when the chargeback comes, the retailer nor the client will be affected because it's going to fall back to the bank. Because all you're doing is proving, hey, I followed, I provided them a receipt. Why didn't you ask them for ID? Well, the card was on their phone. I'm not going to ask them to see their phone. Your phone is your private property. You can't ask someone for their phone, right? Another thing too is that the bad guys are aware of this. So they're doing a lot of burner phones. I know you've seen theft of cell phones, et cetera. They get shipped all over the country. And then sometimes you find phones in, again, our favorite place, classified ads. And people take those phones. And if they're iPhones or whatever the phone is, a Samsung Pay, whatever, that tokenizes the number, they use it. So this is a different problem that's growing currently with tokenization fraud. And it's happening not only in the United States, it's happening here in Canada as well.
Wow. Very sophisticated.
Yeah, no, they're definitely trying to improve on their methods and giving us work. That's one thing we can count on them for, is to keep employed in that sense. I mean, it's very unfortunate.
What about intellectual property? You deal with that as well. What kind of crimes do you see in that area?
So intellectual property, of course, you know, is the intellectual rights of an owner. For example, let's just say Gucci, right? Gucci was a popular product. You walk into a flea market and all of a sudden you see Gucci shoes, Gucci handbags, Gucci belts. Well, we know that they've got a pretty price line. And when you walk into a store that's selling Gucci, you don't normally see 20 or 30 or 40 pieces of items. You see a couple of the items. And that's because it's quality. That's because it's from the Gucci location. And that's because they know the inventory control. Once you walk into the flea market, you start seeing Gucci, Prada, you start seeing Louis Vuitton, all these different brands that are there on display, and you're starting to see 10 and 20 of them. You know off the bat, wait a minute, this is not correct. There's a gentleman here in Canada, well-known, Lorne Hill, and he's done quite a lot of investigations on intellectual property. And I remember watching a video, and this is how I became interested. He was doing a live, and while Lorne was doing the live with this gentleman, they bought a stuffed animal. And when they were cutting the animal open to show this counterfeit animal, hair and feces were falling out of the stuffed animal. So could you imagine an unsuspecting mom and dad? They go to the flea market, their kid's crying, they want to, I don't know what's pretty popular right now, but I'll take you back a little bit. Let's just say Yogi Bear or something like that. I'll take you way back. And they end up wanting that, but it's being sold at the flea market. It's not being sold at a reputable place. And they buy it, they take it home. And we all know kids, they stick stuff in their mouth. All of a sudden, the kid gets sick. Now, people go, well, oh, no, it's just corporations trying to make money. No, corporations actually have a standard of the way they create things. They have a health environment in the way they create things. There is a reason they have quality control. Yes, I understand that some of the prices might not be in their reach, but there's a reason for that. All of those things are what makes it safe. When you as an individual copy the items and make it look as though you're from that business, the job of the intellectual investigator is to now investigate, where did you get those items from? purchase those items, document those items, and then send it to the company to have it verified. I can say, looking at product, it appears to be counterfeit. I cannot say it is counterfeit until it's proven by that company. But you do this long enough and you start seeing, well, if a crow is black, it's black. That's the best way you could put it, right? So this is some of the things that I've come across while doing intellectual property investigations.
Wow, crazy. What about VPNs? I mean, how much of criminal activity, let's say, on e-commerce, for instance, cyber crimes, are people using VPNs? And I'm sure a lot of other sophisticated means too to mask their identity and location.
Well, in today's world, we're all aware that there is VPNs that are out there that are pretty affordable. And I mean, if you're a criminal, you don't want your computer to be fingerprinted, so to speak, right? You leave an electronic fingerprint every time you access an e-commerce site. And again, with e-commerce fraud, it's card not present. And by meaning card not present, you know, you're not physically at a store, or, you know, you're not there presenting a card for the purchase. These guys are punching in numbers online. Some of these guys, I even know what Tor is. Are you familiar with Tor Onion?
Sure, of course. Yeah, dark
web. There you go. So these guys know that if they use VPN, if they use Tor, they could then hide themselves behind that, go online and start testing your environment with cards. And sometimes they'll find the smaller mom and pop stores, you know, at a couple of locations, and they'll do card sequencing. Do you know what card sequencing is by any chance?
No, I don't.
So, for example, I'm a fraudster now, and I've got card ending in 1234. Now, card ending in 1234 will go up to 6789. The first six is the BIN of the financial institution, right? The other numbers that follow can be manipulated. So these guys will then definitely test it, 001, 002. And what's the course to 12 before it? They will get hits on which one has good value, which one doesn't have a good value. And sometimes your system, if it's not set for having exception reports for testing of sequential cards, they'll get true. And before you know it, you're sitting there with an excessive fraud. And sometimes it could go from $10,000 to $13 million, right? And some people are saying, well, no, that's pretty far-fetched. Well, the factors of stores or businesses being impacted, in the Canadian market, you don't see it. It's a privacy issue. Companies don't share information. And why would they want to share that they've had a $13 million fraud? Who wants to say, hey, put a target on my back? You know, we have a weak system, come and get it. But these are things that can happen. As for e-commerce, if you're not taking a chance to monitor the purchases that are being done online, IP fingerprinting, I mentioned that. That's by understanding the IPs that are coming into your system. That's a whole different level where it goes into cybersecurity. And those guys, they have set up systems where they track that. They'll know which IPs seem a little bit strange, which ones are being manipulated. From e-commerce and that aspect, I'll go into gift card before we end here. And I'll tell you why. So with card not present, some companies allow gift card purchases. The same thing with the gift card purchases. You can use a fraudulent credit card online and buy gift cards. Take the gift card, go to a store, buy items, and again, sell it. Who's going to know that you're the one that's buying a gift card? Because you've got to track it, right? Second of all, gift cards being sold in stores can be manipulated. Have you seen the gift card scams that are happening?
I've seen a few, yeah, I'm sure.
Some of them, they cut the packages, they put a strip over it. Some of them, they end up coming into the store and switching out the one card. What they're doing is the magnetic stripe, they're getting the data from it. One of the cases that I dealt with many years ago, an individual, and they were using $500 Visa gift cards. And I was a little bit confused because they were making purchases that were beyond a $500 gift card mark. And I was, well, wait a minute, it's only $500 gift card. They're making $900, $800. I started looking into it and I started realizing that the cards that they were using, the magnetic data that is on it, belong to a Visa, belong to a MasterCard, belong to something else. Gift cards today can be manipulated. If you're not paying attention to them, how you're getting them. If you see someone selling them online, you want to be careful of buying them online, because sometimes you go to the store and what they'll do, they'll say, okay, meet me at, say, HMV. You go to HMV, you meet them, they'll swipe the card. Oh, it's got a balance of $600. Great. I'll take 250. Okay, great. Next thing is sleight of hand, and they give you an empty card. So these are some of the things that are there in the world today that we're dealing with, the world of fraud. And like I said, I don't think it's ever going to slow down or stop. And with the world of AI fraud coming on and getting stronger, we have our work cut out for us.
What about the area of biometrics? I mean, I know facial recognition is now being used in a lot of closed circuit security camera systems, but you've got, obviously you mentioned fingerprinting, voice printing is another one. You get your voice out there, somebody replicates that, uses that to pretend to be you. Are you seeing any of that now creeping into the crime space?
It definitely is more likely creeping into the crime space. I haven't seen any recent articles or anything out there, but I do know that some of the European partners that I've spoken with, you've seen where AI took a child and manipulated it to the point of an adult. And during that process, it's talking to you and telling you, hey, don't put my picture out there because later on, my stuff could be counterfeited. My credit could be counterfeited. They're even showing as far as sex exploitation of children, right? And it's a very disturbing aspect to be involved in. But we as investigators, unfortunately, sometimes we uncover these things while working with it. And I've come across certain things that I won't put out there in public and I've seen. But this is what the world of AI can do right now. With biometrics in Canada right now, the privacy laws, they haven't really put in where you're using biometrics in the stores, but I see it coming. It's definitely going to be coming because with all the crime, with all the violence that's happening, and like our partners in the US, we're seeing it here too in Canada. We got to protect our frontline workers. And to be honest, hey, if you're not doing a crime, what are you really worried about your face being on a camera? And people go, well, I want my privacy. Well, what people don't realize is the minute you leave your home, you're not entitled to privacy. You go into a store, you're on camera. You're driving down the street, you're on camera. You leave down the street, you go down past Bob's house, you're on camera. You go to the convenience store, you're on camera. So what privacy do you really have anymore, right? Unless you're inside your home. Definitely, I can understand that. But out there, and if you're not doing a crime, and you know what? With biometrics, it would help solve crime. Think about how many kidnappings happen. Canada is a fast-growing human trafficking industry. Look how many missing persons we've had, cases, et cetera, right? Think about someone who's a missing person that has an ailment, that may have a mental challenge. These are things that I think people should take more into consideration and realize that whether or not we want it, it's going to happen, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. People, I know there's folks that will say, you know, that's a little bit crazy because it's maybe government owned and you get the conspiracies, et cetera. But I won't get to go down that path, but definitely it's something that we have to take into consideration.
Let's take a quick break for this message from our sponsor.
Picture this. You are a key decision maker at your credit union. Your tellers are tired of the lengthy KYC process. Fraud is a constant worry and onboarding new members feels like a marathon. But what if there was a way to streamline it all? Enter the Sudo platform. Our reusable credential technology transforms the traditional KYC process, reduces fraud, strengthens communication security, and streamlines member onboarding. With Sudo platform, you can prevent fraud, save time, and create secure digital identities. And the best part? It's built right into your credit union's app. This is more than innovation. It's a commitment to providing your members a rewarding experience. We're live and ready to redefine how you do business. Don't wait. Give your credit union the upgrade it deserves. Identify any member in any channel at any time, all while improving convenience and reducing fraud. To learn more, contact us at sudoplatform.com. That's sudoplatform.com.
So given all the work that you're doing, obviously, it probably times it's got to make you a little jaded, I would imagine, about the world, but I'm sure it's changed you personally and how you kind of managed your own personal data and privacy. Obviously, the nature of your work, you have to be a little bit more difficult to discover. So, I mean, what are some things you would recommend that people do? Let's say just number one, to reduce their risk for identity theft.
Okay, number one, first of all, is that if you're using social media, learn your social media app. Learn what you're putting out there, anything you put out into the net, such as photos, information about yourself. You see people, the number one thing that's been spoken to over the years, I went out to dinner, or I'm going out to dinner, or I had this at this place. Well, now I know that you eat at this restaurant every Thursday. Guess what? You're gone for about 2 hours. Now people are like, what does that have to do with identity theft? You open up your home to invasion. which means I could steal your identity, number one. Number two, learn if your app has two-factor authentication. Any app that doesn't have two-factor authentication, I've got a minimum of 20 letters and characters. I won't tell you exactly how much, but I can tell you that it takes the brute force about 400 and something years to get through that, right? You got to have characters, letters, lowercase, numbers. That's something you want to look into. Second of all, where you get your mail, shred your mail. I would advise you buy a pulverizer. It's a shredder. They're really reasonable at home. If you're going to get throughout your mail, please shred it. Please pulverize it. You don't want to have that information lying around. Someone could use it. When you're going online, what you're putting online, for example, your name, your addresses, sites, Google review is a great thing. You can look up a business or even the Better Business Bureau. I'm not in here in Canada. I'm not sure what's familiar in the States, but I know here in Canada, you can look and you start to learn about the reputation of a place. Everybody now, they want to do things like that. Take your time, stop, look at what's the businesses. Because if you put your information on the wrong site, again, you're giving away your information. So basically overall, protect yourself by knowing where you're going, where you're putting your information. Is your information secure on that site with two-factor authentication, security key? I know if you want to get an example of what that means, going to your Google, I'm going to use Google again here. Going to your Google settings, going to security settings, you'll see where they have two-factor authentication, they have a security key, they have an app you can use to get in. And these are the kind of the things you want to look at for securitizing. And second of all, if you don't need to be on social media for anybody else to see, don't put your face out there. Because putting your face out there, that's also part of your identity. And that's it for me, folks.
Yeah, exactly. It always amazes me that people will tell you, hey, like you said, I'm eating over here right now, just constantly sharing their location. You've seen some stories with influencers, of course, who are more in the public figure, you know, they're public figures in the public eye. And you're just inviting the bad actors to come after you. It's just like, stop doing that.
I think the influencers are, most of them are aware or they would have sort of a backing to have that. It's almost like famous people to become famous people, right? You've got to have security. If you're not taking that into consideration as an influencer or sharing information in that atmosphere, again, you're right. You're asking for that to happen to you. And I do not want that for anyone. I do not want anything negative in that aspect to happen. So they do have to become aware of that environment that they're in, right?
Yeah. I guess you would say it's like you have to assess your own personal risk profile, right? If you're more of a public figure, probably need to be a little bit more careful, but it just depends on, everybody has a different, I guess, definition of privacy and what their comfort factors are. But there are certain things, like you said, that you just have to do today to be careful, because my credit card information has been stolen twice in my life, and it's never a fun process to go through.
I'm going to tell you something. If you're going out to shop, don't use your debit card. And people go, why? Your debit card has your information on it. Use a credit card if you can. Get a prepaid card if you can. Because if that becomes compromised, it's only a certain amount of information, you can shut it right down. The minute you take your debit card and you go anywhere and you're using it, you're opening up that opportunity. I know I've been guilty of times where I've had to use it because of whatever reason, but honestly, now I've become such a paranoid person, like you said, a little bit jaded because of all the things that I've seen, that now I'd rather pay with a credit card. If my family is going, like I have elderly folks, I'll say to them, I go, hey, use a credit card. Well, why? And I have to sit there and explain to them, right? So my advice to, that's another thing I could add to that, is that you're going out there to shop in today's world, you never know. And I mean, we didn't really get into the topic of counterfeit terminals, but they are out there at the gas stations. They are there at the point of sale. And that topic for a whole different segment to get into.
I think one good takeaway here with this discussion, though, is a lot of people, of course, always say, well, this can't happen to me, on and on and on. But I think from your viewpoint, all of these crimes are pretty prevalent today.
Yeah, even as a fraud investigator, I know at some point in time that there's a huge chance that I can get impacted. So I take steps within my own life to try and reduce that. And you talk to any good fraud investigator, they'll tell you, yes, we take steps to prevent that, but we know that there might be something that we could miss. We can have an off day. We're human. So that is why we try to teach people. And another thing that bad guys like to do is they like to shame you. They want to make you look stupid because they don't want you to go out and say, hey, I've been defrauded. Why? Because that means you're going to tell people and then they're going to learn about your trick. So that's something too, that if you've been defrauded, I know it's a tough pill to swallow. Come forward, report it. Like I say, you see it, report it. We can stop it. Otherwise, if you don't do it, we won't know what's happening. And let's face it, every day there's a fraud happening. Every couple seconds, there's a fraud happening. If we don't work together, we can't combat it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just keep your guard up. Always be vigilant about that, I suppose. How do people typically work with you? Are you contacted in an unsolicited manner or do you take business? How does this typically work for you?
Normally people will reach me through my website. They'll send me some information via an email. We'll set up an appointment and we'll talk and we'll discuss their matters. It could range from personal information to a business being impacted. And sometimes people just want to have a chat about what they can do to prevent certain aspects, like you said. I get calls from family members. I get calls from friends. I don't mind sitting down with them and they'll talk. Even colleagues in my fields, I will reach out to them or they'll reach out to me and we'll share ideas, right? So visit my website, visit me at Remote Investigations Canada and drop me a line and therefore I'll be able to see what we can go and go from there.
And that is remote-ic.info?
Yeah, www.remote-ic.info.
Okay, very good. And again, that could be businesses, could be individuals.
Yeah, we take in anyone, we talk to you and we see what we can do for you. We're remote and hence the word remote. We don't go anywhere. You don't need to come anywhere and we'll talk to you right where you are.
Anything you would like to leave us with? Any great words of wisdom or words of caution?
Words of caution. Like I said, know the information where you're getting it from. Make sure it's reputable. When in doubt, ask.
Definitely.
Thank you very much for having me on your show. Appreciate your time, sir.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Take care, Nigel.
Thank you.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Privacy Files. In our next episode, we'll be welcoming back our good old friend, Tom Chavez. Tom is a licensed private investigator in California and an audience favorite, as his first episode with us is one of the most listened to on the show. In this episode, we dive into financial crimes and also touch on the dark web economy and the bizarre concept of fraud as a service. Until next time, don't forget, privacy is a human right.